Nigeria Radio, bringing Nigerians in diaspora up to speed.
All right, it's still Spirit of Nigeria Radio, and as advertised, we are here again to discuss Nigeria. And on Nigeria Discussed today, we'll be talking about the Nigeria Sovereign Investment Authority. Of course, you know that this is Spirit of Nigeria Radio, and what we do is to bring Nigerians in diaspora up to speed. So today, we'll be solving all the problems, all the questions around the Nigeria Sovereign Investment Authority. And you know that Spirit of Nigeria Radio is always bringing Nigerians in diaspora up to speed. Today, we have as our guest the Executive Director and Chief Operating Officer of Nigeria Sovereign Investment Authority, Mrs. Stella Ojekwe Onyejeli. All right, Mrs. Ojekwe Onyejeli is a qualified chartered accountant, financial and tax accountant, as well as a scholar of the Federal Government of Nigeria and Institute of Chartered Accountants of Nigeria prize winner. She holds a first degree in chemistry from the University of Lagos, a master's degree in business administration obtained from Cranfield School of Management, United Kingdom. She is a member of the Oxford Business and Wharton Executive Education alumni and is a fellow of the Institute of Chartered Accountants of Nigeria. Mrs. Ojekwe Onyejeli brings more than 25 years of financial advisory, controls, governance, and risk management experience to the board of the Nigeria Sovereign Investment Authority. Prior to the realignment of a portfolio for the Chief Operating Officer role and reappointment for a second term by the President of Nigeria, she had served as NSIA's Executive Director and Chief Risk Officer from 2012 to 2017. She joined the authority on the 15th of October 2012, following a distinguished tenure as Director and Head of Operational Risk and Control at Barclays, where she covered 15 countries spanning Africa, Middle East, and Asia. Prior to this, she was a Vice President and Head of Quality Assurance Africa at Citibank with direct oversight of the enterprise risk and control environment in 14 countries across Africa. Madam, I can go on and on and on and on and on and on and on. All right, Mrs. Stella Onyejeli, you are welcome to Spirit of Nigeria Radio.
Thank you so much, Toye. Thank you for having me. Just to correct you, because this is second fumble on my surname.
Yeah.
Stella Ojekwe Onyejeli.
Ojekwe Onyejeli. All right, so we are talking with Mrs. Stella Ojekwe Onyejeli, Executive Director and Chief Operating Officer, Nigeria Sovereign Investment Authority. All right, so you're welcome. Thank you for correcting me on that. It's always good to get the name straight. This is Spirit of Nigeria Radio, and we must do it right in the spirit of the nation. Okay, so let's start from the very beginning. Why a sovereign investment authority by the Nigerian nation?
That's an interesting question. The idea of sovereign wealth funds is not new. So at the time, so the NSIA, which is the Nigeria Sovereign Investment Authority, is the agency that was created to manage Nigeria's sovereign wealth. Now, it was established in 2011 by an act of National Assembly that was passed. At the time we did that, we were not the first country to go down that road. The general consensus, by prudent financial managers globally, is that for countries basically that have a lot of revenues that they generate from commodities, which they have in abundance, and these commodity prices tend to be volatile, the general consensus is that it makes sense for you to save money when prices are high and you have earned more than what you actually need to, you know, run the country, like your budget for the year. When you have excess, you should save it. And those savings are generally given to entities called, sovereign wealth, or those excesses are generally referred to as the sovereign wealth of a nation and would be handed to different types of agencies to manage. So in Nigeria, we created a separate entity called the Nigeria Sovereign Investment Authority to manage our sovereign wealth. The sovereign wealth being that excess or savings from excess hydrocarbon or, you know, crude oil revenues that we're generating. So it wasn't a new idea, but it was, I think, an idea for which the time had come in Nigeria. And so, you know, the government decided to do that.
Okay, so that was in 2013, I believe.
That was 2011. So the act was passed in 2011, and okay. We started operations in 2012. So the first board was inaugurated in October of 2012.
Okay.
And I can talk about the governance structure of the organization.
No, we'll get to that. We'll get to that. Yeah, but the very first question I have is, Nigerians, both at home and abroad, find it to believe that we have excess. Where does the excess really come from? Because the main thing is that you are supposed to manage the excess funds in a country that is lacking so much. Okay, where do we get the excess from?
Okay, so the act, which is actually a very robust piece of legislation, states very clearly what the source of funding should be. So I mentioned, and you're asking around what is excess. So excess revenues generated. Okay. So let me take you back. I think up till the time we were created, so up till 2011, 2012, if you recall, oil prices were actually above $100
yes.
per barrel. Now, where the excess comes from is every year, and I think Nigerians would know this because the budget for the Federation is published by the Federal Ministry of Finance. Every year when the government puts a budget together, they would determine what is a benchmark oil price that they will use to plan for the year, to plan for the budget.
Correct.
So, for example, let me use 2020 as an example. The benchmark varied, but the average benchmark that they set because oil prices were so low in 2020 was $28. Now, we will produce our crude oil and we will sell. The price varies. Sometimes, and I think in 2020, to be specific, the average price was around $43. So if your budget is based on $28, what it means is that the differential between the benchmark oil price and the actual oil price that you actually get from your sales, that's where the excess comes from. And that's where the excess that is meant to be given to the sovereign, the NSIA to manage, is supposed to come from. Now, at the time we started, maybe Nigerians would remember, there's an account called the Excess Crude Account, which is an account that the previous government had established. That account still exists today. Previously, any excesses that were not used to operate the budget of the country went into that excess crude account. That's where the name comes from. So at the time we started, there was up to, I think, almost $10 billion that had accumulated in that excess crude account. We were seeded, when we started, we were seeded with $1 billion out of the amount that was in that excess crude account. So now, but as you can imagine, the fortunes of oil price, and this is the typical thing with commodities, the prices are very volatile, right? This true, year is up, true. Even within the year, it goes, you know, it varies, very volatile. And we know what has happened to oil prices. So coming from highs of almost $112 around 2014 even, we're talking about, you know, less than, you know, $40 or thereabout. Although now I think it's around 50, a little bit above. But it has significantly gone up and down.
Okay, all right. So you were going to talk about the governance structure because Nigerians are keen to know, you know, what kind of operating system governs this management of our, if you say sovereign wealth, but somehow commonwealth.
Yes, it is our commonwealth at the end of the day, but the global terminology for such monies is sovereign wealth. So the governance of the organization, there is a board of directors. It's a 9-member board made up of 3 executives, the managing director and 2 executive directors, and 6 non-executive directors, including the chairman. All the non-executive directors are drawn from private sector. That has been the established trend from inception. So the first board was that. We are now on our second board. All the parties have been drawn from private sector. The selection is made by the federal government, the Minister of Finance, who is the supervising minister for the NSIA.
Okay.
Spearheads the process for selection of board members and executives, and that's approved by the president. So that's how the board of directors are drawn. Now, the act, which I had said earlier on, is a very robust, strong piece of legislature, is very clear that the board of directors is the body, the governing body that manages the affair of the organization. We are pretty much independent from government. So some other sovereign wealth funds are actually housed in their central bank, for example.
Mm.
You know, they are not standalone entities, but we are a standalone entity with our own board that basically oversees the organizations and, organization and drives strategic decision, our strategy and also implementation of that. Other than the board of directors, we have what is called a governing council. That governing council is made up of 52 members. That governing council is what I would is akin to like a like our shareholders sort of. That because the contributions that we get, money that is given to us to manage, comes from the federation, meaning federal government, all the states and local governments of Nigeria.
Okay.
That governing council has representation from all the federation. So all the state governors, for example, are part of the governing council. Key federal executive members are part of the governing council. And then there's a role for 12 individuals that represent Nigerians in general. So, civil society, youth, lawyers, like that.
Wow.
And it's a 52-member council. But the Act also prescribes that council meets once a year. That's why I'm saying it's like our shareholders, So once a year, we have something that is like an annual general meeting.
Okay.
Where we meet the governing council members. We will, give them a report of what has happened for the year and our performance, and then our plans for the next year. And at that meeting, they will challenge us, they will, give us different maybe projects to look at and things like that. Sometimes they take strategic decisions as well, such as additional funding for the NSIA.
Okay.
But they basically walk through the board. They do not direct our affairs. The board directs the affairs of the organization.
So yeah, that's but do they have powers over the board? For example, can they overturn a decision, 52 against 3?
They cannot. It's a 9-member board,
yes,
of which there are 3 executive directors, right? So it would be 52 against
it's 9. Okay.
But the Act is also very, very specific of about how the interaction will be between the governing council and the board. They are considered to be advisors. They act in an advisory capacity to the board. They do not have authority over the board, like to direct things. But they can advise, and for good relationships anyway, right? You pay attention to what your shareholders want and basically make sure you're delivering value for them. So there's a good relationship between the NSIA's board and the governing council that we meet and engage with every year.
Okay, so let's go deeper into what the functions are or the specific activities, because looking at it, it says that the Nigeria Sovereign Investment Authority Act, which you've been mentioning for some time now, was signed in May 2011 and commenced operations in October 2018. with the intention to invest the savings gained on the difference between the budgeted and actual market prices for oil to earn returns that would benefit future generations of Nigerians. And that's key for me, future generations of Nigerians, you know. So now I also know that there are three key areas where these funds are supposed to be invested. You want to tell us something or more about that?
Yes, I will speak to the mandate of the organization. So once again, the act was passed in 2011. We started operations in 2012. So we've actually been in existence now for a little over 8 years. So the mandate is very, very clear. Again, act very specific. We have a three-pronged mandate to build a savings base for the Nigerian people. So that's the one that speaks to future generations, to enhance development of Nigeria's infrastructure. And the third is to provide stabilization support in times of economic stress. Now, the act, so these are three clear mandates that the NSIA has, and which we should use any funds that are given to us by the Federation to should pursue. We are meant to do this through what the Act describes as ring-fenced funds. So we have a stabilization fund. So any monies that we are given, right, a portion of that money goes into the stabilization fund, and we basically invest along the lines of the mandate, which is to provide stabilization support in times of economic stress. Same thing with the Future Generations Fund, which is the one where we are building a savings base for Nigerian people. Any money that is given to us, a portion of that goes into that Future Generations Fund. And similar with the third fund, which is the Nigeria Infrastructure Fund. Any portion of monies we're given goes into that. The way it works is the act indicates that a minimum of 20% should go into these funds. So what the board decided is that 20% will go into the stabilization fund. Initially, we started with 40% each into the Future Generations Fund and the Nigeria Infrastructure Fund, because we just wanted to balance the split between the two funds. But following government's expressed desire to focus on infrastructure, I think 2 years ago, the board took a decision to direct a little bit more into infrastructure. So currently, any monies that we're given, 30% goes into the Future Generations Fund and 50% goes into the Infrastructure Fund. Now, because they all have different purposes, how we invest in each one is different. So I'll take them one by one. For the Stabilization Fund, which we're supposed to basically manage and for Nigeria to be able to rely on that in times of economic stress. This money can be called at any time. And the fund, the act actually specifies that if there is economic stress, the Minister of Finance will be the one to obviously make that call and get approval from Mr. President and can call on the NSIA to provide funds from that stabilization fund.
Instead of at least taking pensioners' funds and shareholders' money in the bank.
Well, exactly. This is supposed to be our reserve, something that we can call on rather than looking for, you know, money is elsewhere. But of course, you can only get out what you put in, right?
That's correct.
Instead, we started at the first contribution to us was 1 billion. Since we started, we have received
$1 billion.
Yes, sorry, I should say
because
the current.
Nigerians, they will now say US dollars. Yeah.
$1 billion.
Wow.
Now, since then, we have actually received additional contributions of 250 each, three times. Mm. So we are currently at about contributions of $1.75 billion, of which we are basically, which we've split between these three fund mandates and which we are managing according to the objectives of each of the funds. So if I were to speak to that stabilization fund now, because that money can be called on whenever there's stress. And in fact, for 2020, recall we had economic stress when the oil price dropped.
Yeah, I was going to say so. Wasn't there a call during that period?
I'm sorry?
Wasn't there a call during that period?
Absolutely, there was, yes. So there was a call for $150 million, which is in accordance with how this fund should work, as specified in the Act. And we responded to the call, provided the $150 million to the Minister of Finance to deploy as approved by the President. For this fund, there is no story. When the government calls, we must provide the money. So as a result, you're laughing. Yes. As a result, we have to manage it very, very conservatively, right? No, we don't get, we get credit for not losing money. So capital preservation is very key. Mm. If they've given us XYZ amount of dollars so far, when they call, they don't want to be hearing stories that, oh, we made one investment and now the money is like half of the value of it. No.
Yeah, because I was really going, sorry to cut you, but I was really going to go into that. I was really going to go into that, and I'm sure we'll take it later. How do you manage the funds? But go ahead, conclude the stabilization support, and then we'll also look at infrastructure development support. Yes.
All the other.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yes. So, for the stabilization fund, we generally look for investment grade fixed income. So, stuff that there will be no stories, right? You will not lose capital. You can earn, of course, then your returns are a bit low, but at least your capital isn't at risk. So it's very low.
Are those investments locally or both locally and internationally?
They are local and international, but we prioritize international because we are also trying to diversify away from country risk, i.e. such that, if country is stressed and you start calling on entities within the country to bring out dollars, it could be a problem. Mm. So
that's what they say. That's double wahala.
Exactly. So majority of the funds is invested internationally,
okay,
so that, whatever is going on with us is not going on elsewhere. Therefore, when the money was called, we were able to get it from where we had invested it. So investment grade fixed income assets really is what we do there. No, we don't do anything fancy, no fancy investment vehicles or anything. We really try to just
less sure adventure, you mean?
Less adventure. Value preservation. We get some returns, but we're not going to go for high risk things that might bring higher returns, but there's a higher chance that you will lose money. So that's how we manage that one.
Okay. Infrastructure then, development now.
Yes, infrastructure development. So the Act is also very, very clear about the scope of what we do under infrastructure. Is very broad. Everything you can think of, from agriculture to water to education to ICT, very, very broad, as listed in the Act. But our funding obviously was limited. We had 1 billion to start. 8 years later, we're at 1.7 5 billion, right? And infrastructure needs are massive, as everybody knows.
Spirit of Nigeria Radio, bringing Nigerians in diaspora up to speed.
All right, it's still Spirit of Nigeria Radio, and this is Nigeria Discussed. Today, we are focusing on Nigeria's Sovereign Investment Authority, and we've been speaking with the Executive Director and Chief Operating Officer, Mrs. Stella Ojekwe Onyejeli. And I'm saying that, yes, bagam gugung bagam, from Flavor, that was it. Okay, I'm sure that took a break for us, okay, also to be able to adjust the service that was going out. The output had some slight issues, and my producer said we should call for a break. But we had already planned to have a break there. Ma'am, yes, you're welcome. Are you still there?
I am. I'm still here.
All right. Okay, so what we need to do right now is to ensure that we continue in the same state and we...
Hello?
Hello, can you hear me? Hello?
Yes, I can hear you. It went off for a minute, but I can hear you now.
Okay, all right. So you've been sharing with us the functions, the activities of the Nigeria Sovereign Investment Authority. You've also given us an idea of the governance structure. And I'm so happy that, like I said earlier, Nigeria is protecting the future of the future generation. And more importantly, I see something on your website here which talks about corporate philosophy. That philosophy has to do with discipline. And of course, to manage a nation's wealth, you need discipline, discipline, and discipline, and discipline. Okay, so let's continue. You were talking about infrastructure and the activities of the NSIA in the area of health, in the health sector.
Yes, absolutely. So I was talking about Cancer Treatment Center in Lagos. In addition to that, we launched two diagnostic centers, one in Kano and one in Umuahia, also on the premises of the teaching hospitals there. So Aminu Kano Teaching Hospital and FMCU Umuahia. So collaboration with those federal tertiary entities as well. And again, both are getting very good testimonies in terms of, you know, people who are going there to get diagnoses and things like that. So this was part of a strategy in the healthcare space to focus on the tertiary healthcare space and to build this diagnostic center program all in all the geographic zones of Nigeria. So we started with the one in Kano and the one in Umuahia as our pilots. Now those are done. We're going to go on to doing the remaining four, you know, in other parts of Nigeria. We are also working very hard. So our investments have attracted attention from international community. So as part of our investment strategy, we're saying, look, we like to focus on things with nationwide strategic impact, sorts of investment that could attract foreign capital, because, look, the money we have is limited. But we want to do things that, you know, cost a lot of money. In order to stretch our resources, we have to be able to attract co-investors, you know, private institutional investors from international communities to join us in investing in Nigeria. So, you know, we look for areas where we can actually attract foreign capital, where there is good commercial returns, right? And social returns. We're not just, this is not grants that we're doing. We actually invest for commercial returns. The Act specifies that we invest for commercial returns. In fact, we are meant to generate enough from our activities to run the affairs of the authority and also obviously create value through excess returns for Nigerians. Can you still hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. And I was just going to say that essentially, just to break it down for the layman, money is given to you to go and turn around into something more profitable.
So we are meant to... We are not funded by the budget. We actually have to generate enough money to run our operations and create returns, commercial returns for Nigerians. So we look for areas that we can invest for commercial purposes. So, am I still on?
Yes, I can hear you. I can hear you. Go ahead. I can hear you. You're still on.
Okay, it's beeping on this side, so I'm not sure whether I've been...
Okay, you're on. Go ahead.
Okay, I was saying that we are mandated to invest for commercial returns. Nothing we're doing is a grant. We invest commercially. We attract other, you know, private sector institutional investors globally to come and invest with us. So one of the things we're looking at doing now is creating a fund, something like a $200 million fund that will be targeted at investments in the healthcare space. Since we already have proof of concept from our diagnostic center and our cancer treatment center, you know, we're going to be able to roll those things out because we've already tried and tested. That's healthcare. Agri space, we're also doing quite a bit in the agric space. Our strategy there is to, again, partner with different parties, but the government, you know, like we can, in particular states, if states are able to come up with land, or sometimes, you know, it's private sector, so it doesn't matter. We just look for commercial investments in the agri space that we can go into. We have an investment currently in Nasarawa State, where we are basically investing in irrigation of land. You know, we bought a farm. We are kind of expanding the territory, many, many more hectares. We will irrigate the land. We will grow maize and other crops there. That maize will be input for meal. We're building a massive mill that will produce feed for poultry, which, you know, will be sold. So it's kind of like end-to-end integrated farming, the infrastructure that is required and the farming itself. We're doing that as well in the agriculture.
Okay, okay. So, just sorry to cut you. When you say we are doing it, is it a direct responsibility of the NSIA, or you are working in partnership with the private sector and government? And how do you determine which ones will be profitable, or, you know, the integrity of your partners?
Okay, so we are allowed to invest with any party, right? We can work with government, as in the case of the healthcare investments that we've made so far, where we partnered with federal tertiary hospitals to basically set up the centers with them on their premises. But as well, we can deal directly with private sector and, you know, not do anything government. So how we determine is when an investment proposal comes, the investment team will assess and make sure that, you know, whether that investment meets the investment criteria that we have already set up. We have investment policy statements that are already set up clearly that direct the kinds of things we can do, the kinds of returns we should be targeting. So if the investment proposals, you know, we also assess all the risks that are involved. You mentioned something about how do we determine the partners. We do due diligence on every partner or anybody that comes to collaborate with NSIA. We make sure that we, you know, we have done our checks and we understand whether this is a party that we can reasonably work with that will not generate reputational risk issues for us. And that is a sort of a go, no-go kind of criteria. If we're not comfortable that those risks can be managed, then we will not, you know, go into any relationship with you at all. And that's something that we do very, very carefully. You know, we have a head of compliance that basically focuses on that. Every single party that we deal with goes through that check. So that's how we kind of, you know, give ourselves comfort or confidence to partner with various parties that we will partner with.
So what you're saying right now to Nigerians abroad and locally is that if you own companies that have good or brilliant ideas in these areas of infrastructure, for example, agri, healthcare, or even state governments, they are free to send their proposals to NSIA.
Absolutely, and many of them have already. We are in a unique position. Having been in existence for 8 years, I think a lot of people are aware, but yet a lot of people are not.
Absolutely.
So anyway, this
a lot
is,
of people
know,
are not aware.
Exactly. But a lot of people are, and we get lots and lots of proposals from private sector in Nigeria, from private sector institutional investors internationally. When, you know, a lot of the DFIs, for example, the development financial institutions, and other institutional investors, when they want to come into Nigeria, right, you know, because they do their own assessment, they have pots of money that they have to invest in Africa, for example. They look at Nigeria, it's a good market. It's a market where they feel they can basically invest for reasonable returns. The development financial institutions are more socially driven, social returns driven than obviously commercial. You know, so if they look at Nigeria, they typically will come to us to have a discussion about you know, how do we see the investment landscape and can we partner? So we get to actually see a lot of proposals coming from international parties, private, institutional, local Nigerians as well, and government, of course, because we are charged with managing the sovereign wealth, as it were. We basically, and all the governors are part of the governing council. So they are aware and they generally do engage with us and push to us projects that they think would be of interest. Now, what we, how we deal with everybody, because, you know, it has to be a level playing field. We have very clear, specific process of how we will engage. So everybody understands that if you send us a proposal, we will put it through our process. We must check whether it hits all the requirements of the kind of investments we will do, whether the commercial and social returns are met, you know, every other criteria that we need to meet. In addition, of course, our board has to approve. So it has to go through the same hoops. And, you know, we have very clear process that everybody knows that this
but,
is...
But do you have like a limit? Do you have like a limit? Most Nigerians will be scared to say, oh, look, an authority that was started with a seed capital of $1 billion, you know, maybe $200 million is small money to you, maybe, you know. So, and I'm sure it must be dollar denominated from the way I'm hearing you speak, because these are huge sums of money. But you have like a limit, you know.
So how we are thinking about this is, look, the effort to invest 500,000 naira is the same as the effort to invest 50 million naira.
Correct.
Because you must go through the due diligence steps. You must do everything. So how do we make sure we're being efficient? So we try to not put too much effort to things that are below a certain level. typically, we have investments ranging from $1 million to $75 million. So it's a wide range. It's a wide range.
Okay, so let's talk now about protecting the future of the future generations of Nigerians. Sorry.
Yes.
Now, so how do you go about that? Because the future is, you can't really determine the future. The future continues. Tomorrow it extends, and next week it extends, you know, next month it extends, next year it extends. So how do you determine that? Okay, so what do you do to preserve these funds for the future generations of Nigerians?
Yeah, so our mandate there is to build a savings base, right, for future generations.
Yes.
The idea is to create what we like to call intergenerational equity. So right now we have oil, and it is generating money for us. That oil is going to finish at some point, right? Any commodities, some of these commodities have a finite life, like the hydrocarbons.
Yes.
The idea is to make sure that now that it's generating for you and you actually have excess that you're saving, which is what comes to us, that we invest that in different types of asset classes that will then continue to generate money for Nigerians. So that's how we do it. We have a different, we have what is called a, I don't want to get too technical now, but we have investment policy statements that guide our activities, just like in all the other funds. And there it specifies the sorts of asset classes that we can invest monies that we direct to the Future Generations Fund into. So I'll give you examples of the asset classes that we invest there. So we invest in public equity of developed markets and emerging markets. Around 20% of monies in the Future Generation Fund goes into the public equity space. And we do this through international fund managers who are specialists in this area and invest globally. Again, focus is global as opposed to Nigeria, right? We are diversifying away from Nigeria so that these funds are there and are not impacted by anything that may happen to the source country you know, which is Nigeria. Then we also invest in private equity and venture capital. More recently, we've started investing in venture capital funds. Around 20% of the monies in the Future Generations Fund goes towards private equity fund mandates. Again, we invest through private equity funds, general partners that are international. Mm. But also, we have a pot that is Africa and Nigeria focused. We found out when we started, and this is, you know, something that we took on ourselves. At the point we started, the private equity space was quite nascent in Nigeria, right? There were just a couple of funds that were doing, that were operating in that space. So, you know, the likes of ACA and maybe Helios, even though Helios is not based in Nigeria, but they were investing in Nigeria.
Mm.
But with a number of young new funds started coming up, and we realized that we could play a role catalyzing the development of that space in Nigeria, because if we have done our due diligence and we're fine to back some fund managers, then even, you know, international communities and other people then get the confidence to also invest in these funds. So we actually had a strategy to support the development of private equity in Nigeria, and we invested in a number of Nigerian private equity funds. I think we're in about 4 or 5 of them so mm-hmm. far.
High risk or low risk?
So private equity is, you know, the way it works is these guys, all they do is they'll take monies of the various partners that have been giving them a mandate, and they will look for businesses to invest in accordance with, you know, their area of focus. So because you are actually building a business, it's risky just like every other thing. But these are guys who are tried and tested in what they do, and that's all they do. So many, you know, we would only invest, of course, in people who have proven that they have the capacity to do this. Typically, we'll look for fund managers that have a good track record, although we accept in investing that the past is not necessarily a predictor of what the future will be, but it gives you a good sense of how the manager thinks, how they invest, and the kind of returns they've generated. Of course, if someone has had a bad performance, we hardly will be giving them money, you understand? So they have to have done.
But it's the same thing. The fact that he had a bad patch does not mean that he can, you know, get back on track.
Yes, but you will have a harder time convincing your board to give money to people who have obviously failed, you understand?
I know,
so they have
I
to
know.
Prove that they can actually deliver. And then, you know, on the back of that, information that you have at the point you're making your decision has to be clear that these are people that have a clear strategy. They know what they're doing. They've delivered value before. Therefore, they should be able to deliver value again. You understand? That's the way we think about it. Now, the challenge with the managers we were supporting in Nigeria is these were people who haven't had a long track record. So we did step out of our comfort zone to support them, but we felt this was important for the development of investment in Nigeria, generally, you know, the investment sector in Nigeria. And it hasn't been bad at all. We've actually had good experiences with a couple of the funds. A couple haven't walked out as well, but none has been, you know, complete disaster.
All right, that's a good way to put it. And of course, you had managed your expectations. Looking at your fund mandates, the expected average annualized returns is 1%, which is still okay. I mean, like I said earlier, you're
no,
not...
No. That 1% is the stabilization fund.
Yes.
Remember I said that's the one where low risk, low return.
Yes.
That's the return target for that one.
Mm.
For the future generations fund... And the infrastructure fund, it's I think it's around 5%.
Yeah, 5% for the Future Generations Fund and Infrastructure Fund is 6% in US dollars, really.
In US dollars, yes. Exactly. So, you know, that we have to work hard to actually generate that return in US dollars because we're investing locally for the Infrastructure Fund, for example. So, you know, that means whatever happens locally, the challenge of devaluation of Naira and all of that, you still need to generate enough to preserve capital and to deliver a certain amount of return in dollars. So that's actually, you know, quite a tough hurdle that we seek to meet.
Okay,
so
I see that you are a co-developer of the second Niger Bridge project. Okay, and so that means you're expecting some returns, okay? Does it mean or does it say that the second Niger Bridge is going to be tolled? Because how do you make your money back?
Okay, so we're switching back now to the Infrastructure Fund because this is more infra talk than
Certainly.
Yes. Now, in our infrastructure fund, remember I said one of our focus areas was motorways, roads, bridges, that kind of thing. Yes. So let me speak to something else I hadn't mentioned. So our core source of funding is monies from excess crude revenues, as I had said earlier on, and we have $1.75 billion that has been contributed so far. Well, less the $150 million that they've taken, right? So that's $1.6 billion that we have for now. As contribution, we have, of course, generated value since inception. So it's a little bit more than that we have available to work with. So that's for the core source of funding. Other than that, we are also, the Act allows us to manage funds that the government gives to us. Mm-hmm. We refer to this as third-party mandate. So these funds are not coming from that core source that has been specifically mentioned in the funds.
Okay.
It can come from other sources. So, for example, Nigeria at some point raised euro bonds. They did a euro bond issue. Okay. A portion of it that was not utilized quickly. I think whatever they had intended to use it for didn't pan out or something like that. So they had the funds. They gave that to us and asked us to manage it for them along the lines of the infrastructure fund. We refer to these as third-party mandates.
Okay.
We have some money that was given to us. That way it's $100 million that we were mandated to put towards gas-to-power investment. So that's all we can do with that money. Mm-hmm. Then we have another pot of funds under what is called the Presidential Infrastructure Development Fund. So this government wanting to push some of these infrastructure projects that, you know, we've been grappling with for many years now, created a fund structure. They moved the second Niger Bridge project, the Lagos-Ibadan Expressway, Abuja-Kaduna-Kano Expressway, Mambila Power, and also East-West Road, but eventually East-West Road was removed. But all of these projects were grouped together under this Presidential Infrastructure Development Fund. They gave us some money, $650 million to start with a commitment to put another $650 million, and asked us to manage it. So through this program, we are managing these road projects and also one power project, the Mambila Power project. To your question, whilst we are managing it for government, we are also investing in those projects. And yes, you are right. We invest for commercial purposes. So any portion of our money from the NIF that goes into those projects must attract commensurate return.
Okay.
Now, government is not going to give us enough money to complete the projects because, you know, they don't have that available immediately. Otherwise, they would have completed all these projects long ago. So we will have to raise additional funding from other sources. Now, those other sources, private, institutional, international investors, are also going to want returns for their money. So necessarily, all the projects under that program will have to be commercially done. So for the road projects, they will have to be tolled because we have to generate revenue somehow to be able to pay back monies that were borrowed to actually invest.
Okay, looking at the trend and what you're saying, okay, so if an individual or a company has like a $500 million, can I give it to you to invest for me? As part of your thought party?
We can only operate in line with the Act, and the Act only allows us to be able to do these investment activities for the Federation. Okay. For we were set up to manage Federation funds.
Okay.
So we can't take money from a private
company
person, but that private person can co-invest with us. You understand?
Right. Okay, so just making sure.
Do you get the?
Yeah, I do. Hello.
Yes.
I do get it. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So I was saying, private sector that has funds can co-invest with us. So if, for example, we are able to structure these road projects in such a way that, it is commercially viable, a private sector player can look at it and say, oh, okay, fine. This is going to generate XYZ returns in this way. I want to invest in that. So they can co-invest with us.
Okay.
But we cannot take a mandate from, Mr. So-and-so and say we are managing money for him. That's not, that wouldn't be in line with our mandate.
All right, it's still Spirit of Nigeria Radio, and we've been chatting in the last 1 hour or so with the Executive Director and Chief Operating Officer, Nigeria Sovereign Investment Authority, Mrs. Stella Ojekwe Onyejeli. And I'm saying that, yes, at this time, madam, permit me, let me open up the telephone lines. I'll give you another 15 minutes, just in case there are Nigerians both at home and abroad who would like to ask specific questions, so that it's not just between you and I. And just in case we don't get any, we'll continue our conversation for the next 10, 15 minutes. And of course, we'll be done. I know that you have quite a lot of things to say, but the number to call is +234 705 320 1010. If you're calling from Nigeria, 0705 320 1010, and +234 705 320 1010. That's the number to call to reach us in this discuss about Nigeria, where we're talking about the Nigeria Sovereign Investment Authority, with the Executive Director and Chief Operating Officer, Mrs. Stella Ojekwe Onyejeli. And she's been telling us all about, the funds, where they need to invest it, how they invest it, the corporate governance structure. And I've heard quite a lot of things about intergenerational equity, which gives me some confidence that my children, too, will benefit for it, because they are holding it in trust for the Nigerian nation, at this juncture, let me just say clearly that I believe that the Nigeria Sovereign Investment Authority needs to do a lot more enlightenment and education. Quite a number of people don't know half of the things that we've been discussing today. And it will be more reassuring for, Nigerians, both at home and abroad, to know that, there's some, agency, if you permit me to use that one, that is protecting the future of Nigeria, that is investing our excess, funds. And they are, it's not just about, what we see, the carnival and all of that, that people complain about in Abuja. Don't you think so?
And I agree with you. And we will try to do more. We have, when we started, we were, and this is credit to my CEO, his own philosophy is, I don't just want to be talking, right? I want to do and then show people what I've done, I don't just want to be out there without having any anything to show for my existence. So, you know, we kind of started from that very conservative perspective of let us lay the foundation, let us build this up, let us start working, let us have results to show. And then, you know, we can start, you know, being a bit more in the public eye. But obviously, 8 years down the line, I think we are at that point. We certainly have a lot that we have achieved. And yes, we should definitely let Nigerians know that we are working for them and what we have been able to, you know, achieve. So, yes, I take the point that we should definitely be doing more.
Yeah, I like that because as a marketing communications practitioner, and I've been there for, this is about 30 years, if I see sovereign funds or Nigeria Sovereign Investment Authority in the newspapers, I'll just keep, I won't read it because, you know, there's no, yeah, I don't have a connection with the brand. If, you know, honestly, I had to do some homework while I knew I was going to do this interview, and that, expanded my horizon, showed up a bit more things that I needed to know about this, and I'm just wowed to say, oh, yeah. So, I mean, it's about integrity, you know, even of government, to be able to say, okay, yes, there is an agency that is doing this for this reason and all of that and all of that. Anyway, no problems. All right, so what are the key challenges that you face in the course of executing this mandate?
That's an interesting question. To be honest, I think we have, even when we started, we had, so there was more like a countrywide sort of issue, but that was kind of above us, right? At the time, there was a challenge between the states and the federal government about use of funds from the excess crude account. And because the initial funding from the NSIA came from the excess crude account, we were kind of dragged into that. So, you know, there was a lot of negative news. It didn't, it was a challenge from the perspective of us being able to actually do our investments internationally, because I think one of the things that maybe stakeholders in Nigeria do not necessarily see is what the news is like outside of Nigeria. So whatever chatter, you know, happens locally in the press and on social media and all of that, international community sees that. So I recall there was a time we were trying to maybe set up a mandate with a custodian of ours, an international custodian, which is as prescribed by the Act. But at some point, the process stopped because there was some stuff in the press about how, you know, people are against the Sovereign Wealth Fund, the NSIA, the Sovereign Wealth Fund, with that $1 billion, you know, the Constitution, all sorts of negative stuff. So those guys said, look, we if there's a question about whether you are even properly constituted, we can't deal with you, you understand? So we suddenly, you know, it just came strongly to us how news from Nigeria can actually impact our activities. Mm. We were able to address that, obviously, because we were able to prove to them that we are not being, because the state governments took the federal government to court over that, but we were able to show to them we are not, they are not suing us, it's not affecting our operations, but, you know, we engaged them and they could see for themselves and then we carried on. But not everybody, you know, even gives you the opportunity to explain to them your position or how you are affected or whatever. So sometimes there are investment firms, international investment firms that we've wanted to give a mandate to or work with. And, you know, they're like, just reading about you in the press. Well, no, we don't like what we read. Or, you know, and sometimes the negative image of Nigeria also impacts, and we find that we are affected that way. But that notwithstanding, we have, I think, because of the quality of the board members and you know, the executive management, we have been able to overcome, in the sense that we actually have built you know, a reputation for ourselves. We are engaging on par, you know, on the same level with other sovereign wealth funds, our peers. We are part of what is called an International Forum for Sovereign Wealth Funds, you know, where other sovereign wealth funds are present. We deal with them as peers, and we are fully accepted there because we, you know, when they look at us, they see that we do things along the same lines. You know, you spoke of our vision and our values.
Yes.
You know, transparency, ethics, you know, we are integrity. They see that, the discipline, they see that in our operations. We publish, I think we are one of the few government agencies that issue our financial report every year since inception without fail. Hmm. And that is publicly, you know, we put that on the in the newspapers, and you know, it's there on our websites. You know, our results, all the information is there to see where we're considered quite transparent. And so, you know, we find that we've been able to then get good investment partners. So it's a challenge, but not one that is insurmountable. We all also right. find that, you know, various governments have been, they work with us quite well. I think they see the value that the NSIA is able to bring, and they basically offer us as much support as they are able to achieve our objectives.
All right. Thank you very much, Mrs. Stella Ojekwe Onyejeli, Executive Director and Chief Operating Officer, Nigeria Sovereign Investment Authority. I know we can go on and on and on and on, but we don't have the luxury of time. Right now, we are overrunning by 15 minutes. I've used my executive fiat to make sure that we can do it. But I'm sure somewhere down the line, you'll come back, especially when there are new developments or new things to let Nigerians, especially Nigerians in the diaspora, know about. And I just like to appreciate you and thank you for the good work you guys are doing at the Nigeria Sovereign Investment Authority. Also, kudos to the federal government of Nigeria for putting this, you know, in place. And of course, it's quite reassuring that the future of Nigeria is secured in one way or the other. At least it's not all eating everything that we have today. There's something that is protecting our future. And there's something that we are doing with the excess funds that we are able to generate from crude oil or whatever. And I just like to say thank you, and thank you again for being a part of Spirit of Nigeria Radio Diaspora Discourse this beautiful Sunday evening. Thank you very much, ma'am.
Thank you very much, Spirit of Nigeria Radio, for having me. It's been a real pleasure, and I'm glad you've given me the opportunity to speak about what the NSIA is about and what it's doing. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. I'm sure when next we call upon you, you will oblige us as we bring Nigerians in diaspora up to speed. Thank you very much. Enjoy the rest of the day.
All right.
All right. I will close this program with one of your favorite songs. This one is Femme by Davido.
Nigeria Radio, bringing Nigerians in diaspora up to speed.